From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, and that means the weekend is upon us, and it's time for our Friday routines. Later this hour, we'll be talking state and national politics, and we'll hear from a bluegrass punk duo out of Peoria in our arts segment. But first, our local news roundup, highlighting what's been happening in communities across Illinois. On today's show, the Quad Cities and the Twin Cities, Bloomington Normal. Joining us is Michelle O'Neill, news editor for WVIK in the Quad Cities. Michelle, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And also with us is Lauren Warnicki, a reporter for WGLT Public Radio in Bloomington Normal. Lauren, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, Michelle, it strikes me the most universal, overwhelming fact of life in Illinois this week has been the oppressive heat. How have you been holding up? Anything interesting come out of that in the Quad Cities?
Not really. This is sort of standard operating procedure whenever there's a heat wave. Many senior centers, libraries, and other centers just open up for the public in case they don't have air conditioning in their homes. So just yesterday, we hit, I think, a record of 100 that had been set back in 1936. So, you know, it's been hot. It's been humid. This is the second heat wave we've had in the Quad Cities. They attribute it to a heat dome or a big area of high pressure that is like typical over the southwestern states, you know, the desert, but not so much in the Midwest. But it's been very oppressive,
yeah,
to
sure
say the least.
Absolutely. And I did see that some schools closed in the Champaign-Urbana area on Thursday. Lauren, what about in the Twin Cities? Anything interesting happening there with this?
Well, it is also hot here. We've been able to report on some cooling centers that are available for folks without air conditioning. I think the biggest thing that's happened is Bloomington Junior High School was forced to have their first day or two of classes remotely because they were concerned that the HVAC system couldn't really keep up with the rising temps. And we've talked to several sports coaches that have had to divert their practices to later in the evening or play football without pads, things like that, just taking precautions. Other than that, we've talked to a couple of hospitals that have said they've seen a little uptick in heat-related illness, and you know, we're trying to stay cool as best as we can.
Yeah. Oh, remote school days. So even snow days and heat days, you don't get the day off anymore, I guess, if you are in school now. All right.
There is one school in Rock Island, two schools in Rock Island that had to close yesterday because their air conditioning was just not keeping up and they were having problems with it. So
yeah, I think that's probably a more universal problem than a lot of us realize. All right. Let's talk, continue talking about local news. And Michelle, I'm going to go to you now. In terms of court news, I guess you'd say, eyes and ears in the Quad Cities are on the trial of one Henry Dinkins. For our listeners who are not in the region, can you bring us up to speed and what's happening there?
Yes, back in July of 2020, a child named Breasia Terrell, 10 years old at the time, went with her younger brother to stay with the younger brother's father, who is Henry Dinkins. And by the next morning, she had been reported missing. So, long story short, the body wasn't found until March of 2021 in sort of a rural area north of the Quad Cities near DeWitt. And then the charges weren't filed against Dinkins until May of 2021. Then there was a change of venue granted. So the trial, instead of being held in the Quad Cities, was going to be held in Cedar Rapids. And here comes trial date, August 8th. Dinkins waived his right to a jury trial and settled to have a bench trial, a judge presiding alone. So that brought the case back to Davenport, where it would have originally been held had he not asked for the change of venue. So after all those delays, finally on the 10th, Dinkins' trial for kidnapping and murder of Breasia Terrell started. And today is the 12th day of testimony. So the prosecution has been putting on tons and tons of witnesses, you know, police officers, crime lab technicians and experts, all kinds of, you know, sort of technical testimony. But the big day of testimony was when the younger brother of Breasia testified. He was 8 years old at the time. He's now 11, and he took the stand to answer questions about what happened, because he was there the night that they spent the night with his dad and his dad's then girlfriend. And he said on the stand that he saw his father shoot his sister.
Wow.
And the defense attorney pokes some holes in other testimony. So, you know, you can imagine an 8-year-old child not getting things right every time he tells the story to various police officers, various detectives, and then later even attorneys during depositions and things like that. So it's a very interesting case because there's no blood evidence at all. So a lot of that expert testimony will come into play for sure. So next week, they're going to have another prosecution witness who's going to take probably the whole day on Monday. And the defense decided to wait and give its opening statement right before it presents its case. So that's where we're at in the process.
Interesting. I wonder, is this one of those cases where there's some bigger picture policy implications at play, or is it really just the heartbreaking story at the heart of this?
Right. Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Henry Dinkins is a convicted sex offender and was in jail when the body was found on an unrelated charge. And I'm not sure what that charge was, except that he failed to register as a sex offender at various, at least once.
Hmm. All right, let's turn back now to Bloomington Normal, a little bit less of a dire conversation there. Lauren, I want to ask you about a number of pickets that have been happening on the Illinois State University campus. One is among the labor union that represents stagehands and crew members that work on university productions. And then there's also this move among tenured and tenure track faculty members who want to unionize. What can you tell us about those two events?
Yeah, Brian. So we've had two labor demonstrations on Illinois State University's campus in the past week. The first is related to an ongoing contract negotiation, as you mentioned, with the Stagehands Union. So this is a large labor union, the chapter of IATSE Local 193 that represents Peoria and Bloomington, was picketing outside of Braden Auditorium, which is on ISU's campus. I think it's important to know that they have separate contracts with every venue. So there's a different contract at Peoria Civic Center. There's a different contract at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and even the venues around Illinois State's campus. So this is specific to Braden Auditorium and doesn't impact, say, CEFQ Arena or the Center for Performing Arts. The union says that the new production staff at Braden Auditorium is looking to kind of cut safety measures and looking for ways to create efficiency in the staffing. So according to our reporting, negotiations really started breaking down in March when the university didn't want to put written pen to paper in the contract about specific safety regulations that have kind of been to date done through a sort of gentleman's agreement. Two specific examples that were provided to us were related to riggers. So the folks who are up in the air hanging lights or hanging set pieces, they're suspended, 30, 50, sometimes feet off the ground. Safety regulations say that there should be two people on the ground for every person in the air. And according to the business manager in the union, ISU does not want to commit to that to maybe be able to cut one staffing position and create a one-to-one scenario. Another example that we were provided is around the positions that people are assigned to. So for example, someone who was working on lights or working on sound, once their work is done, they could be transferred into a position loading a truck. And this is not conventional practice for stagehands. So the union really wants to try and solidify those safety regulations because they have reason to believe that the new production management there will not kind of adhere to previously agreed upon safety measures that were not actually written down to date. So the timing is interesting with the changeover of staffing and also with another demonstration on campus. This is with our faculty here at Illinois State University. So there are more than 600 tenured and tenure track faculty, and they have been looking to unionize for about the past 2 years. This was essentially just trying to raise awareness and gather signatures about a possible union. And I think their main, sticking point is really about wages and being able to better support the student body here on campus.
Interesting. Well, I will particularly be following the stagehand one as I used to do work as a stagehand, not in Bloomington Normal, but in Urbana as well as in the Chicago area. So that one, I'll be interested to see how that plays out. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking through our Friday news roundup with Lauren Wernicke, who is at WGLT in Bloomington Normal, and Michelle O'Neill from WVIK in the Quad Cities. And Michelle, let's talk about infrastructure now. The old Interstate 74 bridge is continuing to be demolished, I guess. That's nearing completion. What's left?
That's right. So a few weeks ago, the only thing that was left were the twin towers of one lane, right? And the cables connecting them. And then in the middle was steel from where the pavement used to be, right? So the pavement was the first thing they got rid of. But it was really weird to see this pavement, the steel, and it's an iconic green color, right? Anybody who's ever been on I-74 in the Quad Cities knows about the twin bridges, right? And they were just like suspended, you know, by almost nothing. It looked like it was very weird. So then they took that steel out. So all that's left is the towers, the cables, and the piers. Now they did the eastbound side in June and it went off without a hitch. They used explosives. And then they cleared the river very quickly so that river transportation, barges, could keep going up and down the river. That only took about 10 hours. And so this time it'll be very, very similar, only they're doing even more explosions, but there will be more explosions underwater as well as above the water with the towers coming down.
Are these sorts of demolition projects, do they draw gawkers? Do people enjoy watching this sort of process?
Of course. Or
Yes.
And, you know, in June and this time, the project team is asking people, just please watch online. They don't want people there. They're, you know, they've got the riverfront trails are blocked, will be blocked. There will be no river traffic. There will be no traffic on the brand new I-74 bridge, which is just right upstream from the remaining towers and cables of the old bridge. And there's a pedestrian bike lane on that bridge, too. That will all be closed to all traffic for at least an hour.
Interesting.
And then, you know, in the Quad Cities, we've got I-80 and I-280. So all the through traffic, it's pretty easy to get around the Quad Cities and avoid 74, and then local traffic will be routed to Centennial Bridge.
I'm sure it'll be an interesting show, even online.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Lauren, just a couple of minutes left, but sticking with this topic of infrastructure, I understand there's an undeveloped area in Northwest Normal that's maybe soon changing. What's happening there?
Yeah, it has also been Infrastructure Week here. So this is related to a grant program that the governor's office announced last Friday. It's called the Mega Sites Investment Program. So two sites actually in Bloomington Normal were awarded a collective $2.5 million to basically take large undeveloped tracts of land and make them ready to build on. The Northwest Normal site is at the confluence of I-55 and I-74, and that is zoned as commercial real estate. I spoke with the landowner last week, and he also owns this company called Stark Excavating. The plan is to extend some dead-end roads that currently limit access to that site. It's a pretty desirable piece of real estate. It's really in close proximity to those expressways, to McLean County Fairgrounds, and also to Rivian. This will be a pretty appealing piece of property once it's developed, and that $1.3 million grant that they received is going to go towards that. Now, the other grant is in Bloomington, just south of Central Illinois Regional Airport. There are going to be some road and water improvements that make that site ready to become a multimodal transportation hub. So currently, our region does not have any way to kind of easily transfer between cargo, freight train, and semi-truck loading. So the idea is to eventually create an easier way to accomplish that south of our airport. This was a pretty massive grant program from the state, a total collective $23 million, and two of just nine grants here in Illinois were awarded to Bloomington Normal. So it's a very exciting moment for us.
All right. Well, we will continue to follow all of these stories, and we will talk with you both again soon. Lauren Warnicke from WGLT, Michelle O'Neill at WVIK. Thank you for being with us. Happy Friday, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
More to come here on the 21st Show in just a moment. Please stay with us.